Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Cap and trade or no, some climatologists say that small-scale reductions, even large-scale reductions in emissions, aren't going to be enough to halt drastic worldwide climate change. So maybe we should have a plan B. Now, we're not talking about colonizing Mars, not just yet. I'm talking about the idea of geoengineering, global-scale scientific fixes for man-made climate change. When you think on a global scale, solutions can seem implausible and sometimes even outright dangerous, but our next guest sees some real possibilities in how to fix, cool the globe. He is Jeff Goodell and his new book, How to Cool the Planet, Geoengineering and the Audacious Quest to Fix Earth's Climate, makes him one of the best-equipped people in the world to tell us where the geoengineering science currently stands. Jeff, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, what is geoengineering in a sense that we can wrap our heads around?
Well, it's sort of the idea of large-scale intervention in the Earth's climate in order to combat or forestall global warming. So it's things like reducing the amount of sunlight that hits the planet or developing technologies that might suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
If you had to place a bet on which potential globe-altering technology might be used 50 years from now, when we decide as a planet that we have to try something drastic, what do you think it might be?
Well, I think we're likely to see a kind of cocktail of ideas and technologies. We might do things like brighten clouds in certain regions in order to cool certain areas, to shift rainfall patterns around. We might put sulfur particles high in the stratosphere in order to lower the temperature of the planet slightly. We are likely to be building machines that can actually suck CO2 out of the air, a kind of iron lung for the planet. All of these things are within the realm of possibility, and we might not do any of them.
Did you say brighten the clouds?
Yes, I did. It's actually quite a simple and kind of lovely idea, although no one has actually done it yet. We know that from satellite images of ships going across the ocean that if you put tiny particles up into certain marine clouds, they get brighter. The nuclei are smaller, and they reflect more sunlight away. So there are ideas about how to essentially build little sprayers that spray seawater up into marine clouds that will brighten the clouds and reflect away sunlight.
And is there a lot of this science taking place right now? It seems that so much of the science that makes the news is more on assessing the nature and extent of global warming.
Right. This is very new idea, very dangerous idea.
Dangerous how?
Well, dangerous in the sense that we're messing with the Earth's climate, and we don't know what the real risks are yet. This is all a very new idea. And it's dangerous for the scientists themselves who are talking about it because it is such a controversial idea. And so we're just beginning to talk openly about it now. Scientists are just beginning to hold conferences and things like this to really have an open public debate about whether this is crazy or not.
In fact, I would imagine that environmentalists, some of the more purists in particular, would say that even talking about geoengineering distracts us from the real things we need to do to change our own habits, which would reduce emissions and have other benefits, they would say, for the planet and even for, you know, for humanity. So is having a scientific fix out there potentially limiting to our ability to change what really needs to be changed?
Well, it may be. I mean, it's really important to make clear that this is not a substitute for cutting emissions. If anything, it might be a complement to it, something that we might do if things got very bad very quickly and we needed to, say, figure out a way to slow the melt of the Arctic. There's really no way to do that by reducing CO2 emissions. We're not going to do that by installing more solar panels, blocking off sunlight, essentially putting a kind of parasol over the planet with particles in the stratosphere might be one way to do it, but there are a lot of risks involved in this. And it also may be that the whole idea of talking about this kind of scares people straight and says we better cut emissions because we don't want to do this crazy stuff. So we don't know yet how this is going to play in public.
Jeff Goodell, author of How to Cool the Planet, Geoengineering and the Audacious Quest to Fix Earth's Climate. And we can take a few phone calls for him. We have one coming in already from someone who says some of this stuff is already going on. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And that caller is Charlie in Manhattan. Charlie, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, hi. Good morning. I'm calling. I heard about this whole thing on another radio station with a program that this is already happening. With the chemical trails, they're dispersing aluminum dust or aluminum something into the atmosphere to start already reflecting sunlight back into space. But they found that the aluminum is now raining back down into the soil and contaminating the soil. So I don't know what's going on. Is your guest, is he misinformed, or is he
or
telling us what's going on?
Or is the caller talking about something real as far as you know?
No. There's a lot of people out there who believe that there's some kind of spraying going on, this chemtrails thing. I've looked into this in much detail. There's just no evidence that this kind of thing is going on. It's a kind of conspiracy idea that this is there's some kind of subversive effort to do this already. And I've talked to many people in the Department of Defense and all kinds of that. I've received absolutely any evidence of this.
It's interesting to me how cautious you are and even concerned about some of these very geoengineering fixes that you write about in the book. And I guess one of your concerns, since we're, you know, messing with something that we don't fully understand, is unintended consequences. So give us another example of that, because you write about things like shooting billions of tons of reflective dust into the atmosphere. And you could imagine why that might create a whole new series of global climate problems. I mean, just talking about shooting dust into the atmosphere is going to make, you know, asthmatics and everyone else cringe on the face of it.
Well, that would seem like it. First of all, it's not really billions of tons. It's more like millions of tons. It's actually a pretty small amount. It goes high up into the stratosphere, not into the lower atmosphere where normal pollution goes. The amount of it is very small compared to the amount that's already up there. Among the many things to worry about, there's not much worry about human health impacts from inhaling this or anything. It's such a tiny percentage. And it wouldn't have heavy metals and things like that in it. So the human health part is not the worry. The worry are things like, what will it do to the ozone chemistry? How will it shift the precipitation patterns by changing the balance of heat in the atmosphere? And most important, if you're reflecting away sunlight, you're not lowering CO2, and that is having a big problem for the oceans, for ocean acidification, which is a kind of growing concern that the oceans are acidifying, coral reefs are vanishing, and the food chain is in trouble.
And you dedicate a portion of the book to studying the history of man's attempts at changing weather and climate. Geoengineering as a theory almost predates the whole CO2 global warming discussion, right?
Well, it's one of the most ancient impulses of man. It goes back to, you know, the Egyptians and farther back of, you know, manipulating the climate, of controlling the weather. You know, the Greek gods, you know, were always blowing ships around and causing storms. I mean, this is a kind of primal impulse of human beings to control the world that they're in. And the thing that's changing now is that we know that we are already doing that by dumping billions of tons of CO2 into the atmosphere. The question is, now can we do it in an intentional way and do it in a way that perhaps reduces the risks of dangerous climate change?
We talked earlier in the show about the president's effort to keep nuclear weapons out of the hands of terrorists. You write about a scenario in which geoengineering falls into the wrong hands and someone uses it in a terrorist sense. Is that actually something to be concerned about?
It is something to be concerned about, because one of the things about geoengineering is it's cheap. The sunlight blocking technologies, putting particles into the stratosphere, can be done by policy analysts call rogue nations. It could be done by China, by India, by Texas. It could be done by individual billionaires who decide that they, maybe even for good intentions, want to try to cool things down or to affect the climate. And if you have a nuclear power, like in India or China, who starts doing this, perhaps for domestic reasons, there's a severe drought or something in their region, they decide they want to try to manipulate the planet, the climate, in order to bring rain or to shift rainfall patterns. It doesn't work. Things go wrong. What do you do?
Chio in Plainsboro. You're on WNYC. Hi, Chio.
Hi. I just had a question for your guest. I was wondering what the reduction of CO2 levels and how far it would have to go in order not to affect plant life, and what effect it would have on plant life if it was reduced drastically.
What level of CO2 to reduce?
What level? I think I understand where he's coming from. I heard a conservative talk show host the other day railing against the theory of global warming altogether, as you might imagine some of them do, saying, why do you think they call it the greenhouse effect? Because carbon dioxide helps plants grow. We want a greenhouse effect. So I'm sure that was wrong. But I think that's the nature of Chio's question.
Right. Well, certainly CO2 does help plants grow, but it also has many other impacts on the planet, like ocean acidification, which I talked about, and the fact that it acts as a thermal blanket over the planet, which is melting the Arctic and causing all kinds of changes in our weather and climate systems.
It's a question of optimal levels of CO2, right. So you can grow the greenery of the Earth without warming it up to potential catastrophe.
Right. And one of the things about geoengineering is we are actually going to make decisions about what level of CO2 we want to have on the planet. How much do we want to remove? How warm of a climate do we want to live in? And these questions of intentionality, of the kind of world that we want to live in, how warm we want it to be, we're actually, this is really about building a kind of crude but effective global thermostat.
So from a political perspective, before you go, I mean, I wonder why the world can't come up with a consensus on how to tackle climate change. It's no big mystery, really. Everybody's got different interests, and so they run into each other in things like the inability in Copenhagen to create some kind of consensus for action. But is this what's driving scientists to take matters into their own hands with geoengineering ideas?
I think that's part of it. I think it's become very clear to a lot of people that, you know, this collective action problem of reducing CO2 emissions is not working, and that the science of the climate science is telling us that the risks are growing and growing, you know, every year, that we stall and fail to come to any kind of global agreement. And there's a lot of pessimism that there will ever be any kind of global agreement to cut emissions. And so the question becomes, what would we do? What do we do if things get dangerous and nasty soon?
You know, this was going to be the end, but I want to add one more call because I think he's emblematic of a lot of people listening right now, probably. Matt in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. And your concern is, even if this can work, it's solving the problem in the wrong way?
Yeah, well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I feel like my concern is that it doesn't actually address the cause of climate change. In fact, it seems to only enable the behaviors that are causing it. It makes it sort of okay to pollute or to emit carbon, which will in turn require even more geoengineering. So it doesn't seem to present a conclusive solution, but is instead a sort of perpetual Band-Aid. And I know that that your guest said that it can't be considered a substitute for cutting emissions, but in practice, what would prevent it from being treated as such?
But let's play with that idea hypothetically for a minute, Matt. Let's say there was some geotechnology that turned out to be safe, that could extract all the excess carbon that industry and cars and everything else was spewing into it. Would that be a bad thing?
I guess what is the end game? I mean, if we have a technology that will suck up all the carbon we're currently emitting, what about when we start emitting more because we're allowed to? Won't the Earth become sort of over-engineered?
Or is it about something else? Or is it about other things regarding industrial life and mass automobile usage that you would be uncomfortable anyway with, and so you don't want the problem solved on that engineering level? Do you understand the question?
Not really, no. I mean, my concern is that the Earth will become one great big lab, and by not, we're unsure what the final answer is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we keep on engineering, what will happen to the planet? We can't keep on changing how the Earth acts. Even if the current solution works, we can't be sure that that the next one will.
Matt, thank you. And we have 30 seconds for a final thought on that.
Well, I just think what you're bringing up, the big picture idea, what you're bringing up is you know, human beings turning the Earth into essentially an artifact where we become the zookeepers and the animals is a very true and profound thing. However, I've thought about this a lot, and I think that there, you know, is much to be gained from an active relationship with nature. And I don't think that this is the end of mystery, that this is the end of nature. And I really think that the predicament we're in now, the real danger is not technological hubris, it's human apathy.
Jeff Goodell has written How to Cool the Planet, Geoengineering and the Audacious Quest to Fix Earth's Climate. Very provocative. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Now, before we go to a break, listeners, tomorrow is supposed to be the deadline for mailing in your census forms, after which, if you don't do it, you can expect a friendly census worker to pay you a visit and ask if you want to be person one and have an interview. And as part of our 10 Questions That Count census series, we've been collecting your 11th question nominations. If you could ask all Americans one additional question, what would it be? So we're going to have a call-in now, our first 11th question call-in. One of the most common ones we've gotten is some version of this, as asked by Randy Swan in Croton-on-Hudson. Taking into account all information you know, what would be your most desirable place to live in the USA? So let's take on this 11th question for our last 10 minutes this morning. Taking into account all information you know, what would be your most desirable place to live in the USA? Call us with your answer to that 11th question at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What would be your most desirable place to live in the USA? 212-433-9692. And we'll take your calls right after this.